Hopefully no ads just ran for self-lubricating pocket catheters. It's a great product. I highly recommend you go out and get them. Michelle, you were talking about...
You sell out.
I know. But no, I won't sell any product that I don't use. So glad to have this next guest on. Was actually the first guest ever on the show, and now author of the new book that's just making the rounds, Who Built That? The awe-inspiring stories, now I screwed it up, she's never going to come back, of American Tinkerpreneurs, Michelle Malkin. Thanks so much for being on.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Stephen.
All right, good. Now that I got that intro out of the way, let's stop acting like it's formal, because that just...
All right, I took my shoes off.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, just don't step around Dick Morris. So, let's... We soiled this entire segment right off the bat, and it's my fault.
You're
a nice lady, and I ruined it.
Reset button, please.
Reset button. Anyway, I was gonna. Well, let's just go straight to the book then. You're making the rounds now. Well, firstly, before we get to that, Michelle, you know we've talked about this a lot. You kind of took a, I guess, would you say a sabbatical from most media for a while?
I did. I needed it. You know, you were in it. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
To be able to maintain that every single day and not feel like you're just about to have a heart attack or, you know, need a just permanent hot shower.
Right.
And, you know, the reason why we can do things like that is in large part because of the alternatives we have as social media entrepreneurs. You're doing it now, and it afforded me and it afforded my family a kind of freedom that I would have never envisioned when I embarked on my media career almost a quarter century ago, when you had to be a company man or a company woman.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Are you, I know you've been kind of, I guess, dipping your toes back in the water. Are you mainly mm-hmm. going to be doing media to promote pieces of content like your book, or do you think we're going to be seeing the Michelle Malkin show on traditional media anytime soon?
You know, I was very grateful for the friends that I do have at Fox News who, you know, welcomed me back, with, you know, just with great grace, to talk about the book. I think it's really important to reach those platforms, especially with the message of this book.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, I like my freedom. I like being out in Colorado. There are other things that are, you know, way more important to me and always have been. It's the reason why we bailed on the East Coast and the whole D.C., New York scene in the first place. And, you know, because we can be on Twitter and on the blog and on Facebook and disseminate our message in other ways, you know, I don't have to be on kind of like the daily TV treadmill.
Right.
But, you know, for a book launch and a book campaign, I make no bones about it. I'm trying to reach as many people as possible.
Sure, absolutely. No, I hear you. And it's funny you say that. Isn't it a wonderful feeling, Michelle, that nobody can fire you?
Yes. I really think it's the most liberating feeling of all. And I think, you know, back when I wore the corporate media hat, and it really was the only choice around, I worked for two major newspapers, you know, syndication and early bloghood gave me a taste of that freedom. And obviously I'll never regret a moment all of the work that I put in, you know, those past, 10 years when, you know, when you saw my face pretty regularly on TV. I just think, you know, when you're trying to balance different needs and wants, it's so much easier to do that when you have the world of the internet and bits and bytes,
right,
to fill a vacuum.
No, I think you're so right. And I know this is probably way more personal than any of the other interviews, but listen, we've talked about this before. I think last time you were on, when I also worked in traditional media, I've always said this. I've never said anything that I didn't believe. But there is absolutely some truth to the fact that I didn't really get to focus on the things that I truly believed in, the things I was passionate about. And that's just because, listen, there are certain things that are an easy sell in traditional media and certain things that aren't. And I don't begrudge anyone at all for that. Do you feel like now being completely independent, off in your own immensely successful island, we make it sound quaint. I mean, you've done very, very well. You've been a real trailblazer. Do you feel like this book now is a more accurate reflection of the things that inspire you than you've maybe done in the past?
Well, I think it just provides a deeper, broader understanding or picture of what motivates me.
Yeah.
And, you know, the, of course, every day is you make choices about what you're going to drive, what message you're going to drive home. And there's this question of who picks the frame.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're going to do a segment on TV, of course, it's natural. You don't pick the frame. And
right.
So the picture that's presented is not necessarily one that represents, you know, completely who you are. And this is why I started off the book joking about how a lot of people perceive me as being the angry brown lady on TV. But, you know, for most of the people who have met me on the speaking trail or who have had any chance to interact with me personally, they know that's just one small aspect of my personality. And just like you said, Stephen, because I always say it too, I'm very proud that I have never said anything on TV or radio or anywhere else that I don't absolutely believe, because I feel as if, and I know you do too, Stephen, that if, what's the point?
Right.
I mean, what's the point of having a platform or a microphone if you, turn on some sort of a personality that isn't completely authentic? I mean, really, why be in the right?
I'll tell you the point. The point
yeah.
is to sell a boatload of self-lubricating pocket catheters. That's the point. That's why some of them, they get tempted by the mountain of
yeah.
cash. No, that's a little.
Yeah, I understand that. I feel like I could not have sustained, 25 years of going out there and putting yourself on the line and you know what it takes, Stephen, because, it's putting yourself at risk, putting
sure.
your family at risk, in dire ways that you would have never thought possible when you embarked on.
Well, hey, I hate to cut you off. We have to go to a break,
yep.
and I want to bring you back, and we'll get more into what you're saying and the book, Michelle Malkin, Who Built That? Ladder with Credit. We'll be right back. And we are back. Hopefully no ads just ran for self-lubricating pocket catheters. It's a great product. I highly recommend you go out and get them. Michelle, you were talking about...
You sell out.
I know. But no, I won't sell any product that I don't use. And I tell you what, Michelle, if you have not... You haven't lived until you've used one of these self-lubricating pocket catheters. I'm sorry. Again, we started. This is a nice.
I know
lady.
We've turned this into this whole philosophical thing. It's pretty cool. You always do this. I love this. That's why I love talking to you, because everyone else is. So why did you write a book? What is it?
Well, I have a list of your questions from your publicist,
yeah.
and I was like, I mean, she seems very nice. I'm going, what the hell? I don't want this list of questions.
Well, a lot of times people just want to be fed. I mean, that's the thing. And so that's the thing. There's a lot of people out there who, I just feel like there's no time to waste. And I never want to feel like I'm phoning it in.
Right.
And you see people all the time and you think, man, what a waste. What's wrong with you?
I know.
Completely passionate about what you do. Look at what you're able to do.
Well, you were pretty passionate on Twitter the other day. I dare say a little bit of profanity made some appearances.
Oh, geez, which one was that?
Well, same for the nice little brown lady. By the way,
I know what it was.
Yeah,
it was a typical story of left-wing blogs lying, and accused me of falsely accusing me of using some doctored photo on an article that was syndicated and then run by National Review. And you know what I hate? I don't care if you're on the left or on the right. If you can't man up and take responsibility for your mistakes or errors, yeah, I'm going to call you out. And that's a great thing about Twitter. And I think it's another great thing about being independent, because
sure.
it's not like high school where you're on some team and you're always on that team, right or, whether they do right or wrong. And I think that's the way I've been when it comes to, criticizing the Republican Party, and
sure.
that's the way I live my life.
Oh, by the way, I hate to stir up drama, but I'm totally going to. Did I tell you that I didn't really realize, I went on Alex Jones's show to disagree with him, and I basically got him to apologize to you.
Really?
He said he was, I swear to you, he said, I think there were some things that went down. He said, I really do support most of what she does, and I think we should all be joining together. So I'm just saying, I don't know what's going on there, but it was surprising to me.
Hmm.
And for those listening, I went on and disagreed right away with Alex Jones. So don't send me
yeah.
your letters. It was a fascinating sort of discussion. But you know what? You're right, and it does seem like there are a lot of people that are phoning it in. And I've talked about this with Andrew WK and I think Milo Yiannopoulos last week. You know, this is abnormal. I know. For people like you and I who've done media for so long, but this is kind of the way media is going for younger people. They want things that feel a little organic. And my theory has been, you know, when our parents were growing up, it was let's sit around at the dinner table and talk, and then we'll sit and we'll watch, you know, The Tonight Show, or we'll watch Steve Allen, and it's, oh boy, gee, betcha. Whereas now people aren't talking with each other. They're so married to their device. They're looking to their entertainment, and that's sort of the podcast phenomenon, for that sort of human touch and interaction. They want it to feel more conversational. I don't know if you've picked up on that, because you sort of always have your finger to the pulse of how media evolves. Have you noticed that with younger people?
Yeah, I certainly do. I don't know if this is the best example of it. It's just something that's been on my mind lately. But my oldest, my daughter, had wanted a Twitter account. She really, really, really wanted one. And, you know, I had hesitated, and I let her do it. And then she felt like she was talking to an empty room, because none of her friends were on Twitter. So think about it. She's a high school freshman. She is fairly well informed, very politically aware, without really much of a direct hand on my part. But at this stage in her life, I think if she had to define herself as anything, she'd say she was libertarian leaning. And she's not on Twitter, but you know where all the kids are? Instagram.
Instagram and Snapchat. And I went to Instagram, and it was basically nothing but pornography. So I didn't go back.
Well, you know, I opened up an Instagram account, several months ago, mostly as a tool to do something that we've just been talking about, which is sort of to provide a fuller, richer, rounder picture of who we are. I think that one of the troubles that the right faces is this problem that I've talked about framing, framing who we are. It serves useful purposes to be perceived all the time as, you know, an angry person who is, you know, fully immersed and obsessed with partisan politics, and that's not true. And the more you are able to make yourself look like a human being, the more dangerous it is for the progressives.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And the problem is, Michelle, that you and I both know this, that a lot of people who sort of control the more conservative mediums don't want that. They want the talking points. And that's where I've never said anything I don't believe, but I definitely, you know, listen, I used to do all the radio circuits, and I don't do any media now unless it's a good close friend. That's my general rule. Just because A, I don't really need it. And B, it got to a point where I was just going, well, I know what they want me to say, and I'll throw in a few punchlines. But like you said, it doesn't present the whole picture as to who you are. And leftists are so good at creating stars and creating these personalities. And I feel like the right really misses that. Because like you said, if people really knew you more closely, I mean, I know you as I know you, I think there are a lot of people who have these sort of preconceived notions about you that would have their mind changed. But you and I know the only way to get them to see that is through your own social media. It's not going to happen through traditional media.
Exactly. But I will say this, just to sort of temper or leaven everything that I've said. You know, I've been around enough and, you know, interacted with so many just really wonderful grassroots conservatives.
Yes.
And what they hate most about the GOP establishment is the fact that these people never fight back. And you see them on TV, and it's clear that their main agenda is to get invited back on the show, to chum it up in the green room. And so whether it's, you know, appearances that I did on The View for the last book, or with Matt Lauer, you know, or even just last week where, you know, I had been on hiatus from Fox for a long time, I did the whole, you know, book promotion. And then they had me on for a segment on one of these shows where they put me up against some dumb open borders liberal. And yeah, my head is going to explode because I can't stand what I'm hearing. And for the most part, these people get away with it. So yeah, I think it's cathartic. And I think there is a utility to, you know, if you've got 3 minutes to, you know, completely expose some open borders traitor, yeah, you're going to do it. But like I said, you know, the framing is really important, because I don't want to just be seen as somebody who, you know, hates immigrants, and that's why I went off on the guy in the first place.
Right.
This idea that we all just want to all throw every last foreign person into a cattle car. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it does make me mad. Yes, very mad.
But the truth is, though, you'll be authentic about that, and mm-hmm. that's what I appreciate. Whereas, like you said, you hit the nail on the head there. I think a lot of people miss it. People mm-hmm. have points of view, or they have things they want to say, but their main goal is to make sure they can get back on
yeah,
as a guest.
Right.
And so you're going like, "Oh, you were right on the logic trail to a good point, and then you curbed it. What happened?" And
right.
it's very and I don't think you've really ever done that. And so that's where, you know, it's the old Wayne Gretzky quote: "Don't go where the puck is; go where the puck's going to be." Whenever everyone else is so busy playing the game, you stood out, and that made you more in demand. I think I spoke about this on air. You know, I've worked with there have been a couple of people, Michelle, who have approached me about sort of syndicating the show. We're on a mm-hmm. couple stations, and then what comes with it is okay. They get to pick the sub hosts, or they want to have control over the guests. And so once the conversation turns to me, going, "Go screw yourself. We don't really need it, and thanks anyway." It's no. Wait. It all of a sudden the dynamic changes, and people find that interesting. And I think that's what's interesting about you. If you're on a panel, and there's three other people, or if you're on debating two other people, and their goal is okay, make sure I get back on the show. It's a very different. There's going to be a very different path taken to that end goal than okay, make sure I'm right and truthful. And I think
exactly. Exactly. That's right. And I would say that the most enjoyable TV appearances I've had since I've gotten, you know, back into it the last couple of weeks were the longer form programs and segments. I did 45 minutes on C-SPAN, and God bless C-SPAN. You know, it's always no holds barred there, and they've always been great about just, you know, giving me a fair shot. And when it's more conversational, and really when somebody's yelling at you and, you know, calling you the most evil person on earth, and you're able to do more than 30 seconds and really reveal, you know, the truth about who the real haters are, it's really enjoyable. It's a lot of fun.
Right.
And then the other thing I did recently was I got to speak at the Reagan Ranch last week, and they're going to be showing that on C-SPAN again. And I think it's really important to reach that kind of audience because people will give you a shot because they know it's not just going to be 30 seconds and out. And
right.
you have time to develop your ideas, and that's what I got to do with this book. As opposed to the other reason why I was really mad the other day, Stephen, was a Washington Post book reviewer who was mocking the chapter that I did on toilet paper. Thinking that this was so funny in and of itself, QED, because he couldn't wrap his head around, you know, possibly reading the whole thing, digesting it, and understanding the thrust of what I was trying to do, which is what you tried to do with so many and done successfully in your past videos of in particular reaching younger people. Remember the segment you did with the kids and the Halloween candy, which my still one of my kids' favorite segments. You know, really driving these lessons about a free market economy home.
Yeah, well, you know, first off, I'm actually more flattered when your kids compliment me, Michelle. No offense to you, but it's like for people who don't realize their children are these absolute just total talent, these massive talent pools where you look at it and you go, "Oh my gosh, I wish I were as good at anything as this kid is at music. I'm a loser," and it makes me want to go swallow a sword. Is that the Asian thing? Are you the tiger mom? Is that what's going on?
Well, I had a mountain lion mom, and okay. You know, I look like the marshmallow woman compared to her. But you know, I think that inculcating that sense of drive and work ethic, and there's a Latin phrase that I included at the end of the book, which is really our family motto: "Nihil boni sin labore." There's nothing great achieved without work.
Yeah.
There's your Latin lesson for the day, dude.
Unless you're a Kardashian, and that includes just tucking your zub behind your legs right now. They get an award for that, Michelle. I'm sorry. I took the conversation to a weird way. You know what? Let's hit the refresh and bring on for the last segment where we can talk specifically about your book. I know you've talked about that everywhere else, but my audience may not necessarily be familiar with it because there are a couple things that I think are important for everyone to know, and you should drive that point home. Michelle Malkin, Louder with Crowder, will be right back. We are back with Michelle Malkin. Now is the point where I justify having brought her on the show. So this book, Who Built That? Awe-Inspiring Stories of American at Tinkerpreneurs. That's a hard word to pronounce, Tinkerpreneurs. It's obviously sort of a shot back over the bow on you didn't build that from Barack Obama. Did this come from a place because you yourself are – I mean, I don't say this. I don't want to be one of those interviews where all I'm doing is, you know, kissing up. But, you're pretty much a pioneer. You blazed a lot of new trails with some of the things you did in the online sphere. Was that a big inspiration for this?
Well, I appreciate that, and I really appreciate just your public recognition of that, because, you know, again, I think it serves the left's purposes to not acknowledge, you know, the full breadth of who you are. So it's much easier to just, you know, consider me these phrases that have been bandied about for the last, you know, decade and a half on online, that I'm just some white man's puppet, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I actually did think of these business ideas. And
clarify what that is, because that's important.
Yeah.
I said, you know, no one was doing the Twitter aggregation sort of news timeline before you did it at Twitchy, and people were furious. And listen, I wasn't saying you invented Twitter, okay?
Exactly.
I like you, Michelle. I don't like you that much. I wouldn't laud false praise.
I don't like me that much.
Yeah, exactly. I was saying that news sites, you know, they might mention offhandedly, like, Ashton Kutcher said something stupid, and there might be a hyperlink to you know, Twitter. But you were the first one to put in a timeline in a way that was entirely, you know, graphically accessible. This is what happened on Twitter. This is the narrative. And that was the entire news story. Not tossing it in with commentary. You were the first person to do that. And I was amazed that people were mad at me giving credit.
Well, yeah, and I think there was partly it was deliberate misunderstanding.
Right.
And also, again, because, you know, if people acknowledge that, yeah, I had something to do with that, yeah, I had an innovative thought, again, I think it's, you know, it's something that does not compute in their worldview. And that's why you'll never see me at South by Southwest or up there with Arianna Huffington. I have to tell you, Stephen, when we first rolled out Twitchy, you can go back and look, unless, of course, they deleted them. I didn't bother to save any of these stupid tweets of people who had no idea what I was doing. They didn't understand it. They thought Twitchy was the stupidest thing. Even some former so-called colleagues at other sites that I had created, snarking about
Twitchy. We want names.
And now, of course,
we want
everybody
names.
Is pissed off. No, I'm not.
I know.
I'm being Christian. So look, you know, this is something that, of course, every disruptive innovator from the industrial age to the internet age has had to face, whatever the degree. Obviously, it was so much smaller than mine. You know, it's not a huge breakthrough. I think it was inevitable that you were going to see Twitter aggregation. We just happened to be there among the first. And I think it was really important to get gain a foothold in that, because I think the right has been caught flat-footed so much, and I wanted to be ahead, and we were, and I'm really proud of that.
Right.
And I think that this idea of disruptive innovation, I think, really captivated me. And that's why I was so, you know, really keen on doing this book. It was really like taking a graduate course in the history of American innovation.
Now, would you say, well, I guess let me scrap that question. I was going to say, if you feel the need to focus more so on inventions or sort of improvements, because it seems that the United States now doesn't maybe invent as much, but they improve upon things really, really well. They innovate things, or, you know, they're creating better mousetraps. Do you think we're in a stage right now in American history, as you research this book, where not everything under the sun has been done, but a lot of it has, and so you see more entrepreneurs, you know, like the Zuckerbergs, people who didn't invent the internet, but they're creating the Facebook, they're creating the Instagram. Does that seem to be where the puck is going?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, actually that's a trend that traces back to the industrial age, and that's one of the things that makes our free market economy, you know, such a marvel. I have a quote from de Tocqueville in the book that talks about how, you know, what makes America great is not the endeavors of a few huge products and projects, but the confluence of an amazing amount of small ones. And that's the history of whether it's the bottle cap or the razor blade or even the development of glass bottles in this country, that it was, you know, one insight that was labored upon and tinkered upon for years and years and years and continually improved. And, of course, the ability to profit from those large amounts of improvements over time. I mean, the people that I highlight didn't just have one or two patents. They had 200 or 300 or 400.
They should have gone on Shark Tank. Yeah, right. They get chewed out by Kevin. That's, you know what, that's another thing. You know, we talk about there seems to be, because conservatives love to write off millennials. You know what I mean? And yes, they're far to the left, but there really is, if you look at their investment patterns, they're not rolling the dice in the stock market, but they actually are investing long-term in diversified portfolios. They do believe in higher taxation and Bernie Sanders, but then you look at them and a lot of them are really trying to swing for the fences and become entrepreneurs. Do you think the American entrepreneur is, like a lot of people on the right say, kind of dead with my generation, or do you think that it'll be even bigger than ever?
Well, yeah, it is thriving in a way, and it is that indie spirit, which has sort of been the theme of our entire show here, people who want to work for themselves. Now, it's paradoxical, because on the one hand, shows like Shark Tank are wildly popular, and yet these same millennials who are striving to hit it big vote for people whose entire careers are based on demonizing the financially successful. So why is that? Why don't they connect the dots? I think a lot of it has to do with just a complete vacuum and absence of historical lessons that would immunize them to this wealth shaming cancer that I talk about.
That's true.
I mean, I quoted Bruno Mars the other day. He's got that song Billionaire, which, you know, they all bop their heads to because I want to be a billionaire so freaking bad, right?
Doesn't?
Buy all the things I never had. And at the same time, they listen to Obama, the class warrior, spitting out the words millionaire and billionaire like they're profanities.
Right. That is true. That's a good point. I remember actually when the last time I saw you, I think your husband was coming back from a Bruno Mars concert with your kids.
Yeah, we happily fork over our hard earned money.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. And it's a good point. I think there is a disconnect. I don't know if it's, I mean, you have people who are staying in school longer. A lot of them haven't paid taxes. Socialism is no longer a dirty word because of the, I mean, institution of higher learning and, of course, the media. I mean, if you look at Bernie Sanders, it's amazing, but he's gaining so much traction with people my age, dare I say it, even more than Hillary with the leftists. And these same people are often the people who are innovating and creating these amazing services online. So there is a real sort of dichotomy there. And I don't know that I have, you know, I try and provide, I don't know that I have any kind of an answer for it other than hopefully they'll grow out of it.
I mean, I don't know how when, you know, the common corification of the teaching of AP U.S. history, the teaching of economics in this country is now, you know, thoroughly saturating. I mean, it's not just college. It's not AP U.S. history courses. It's preschool where you've got an entire cadre of social justice warriors turning our kids against entrepreneurialism, and obviously, you know, these people who are coming out of the teaching core, the Teach for America types, what do they do? What do they make? They make trouble. They're leading the Baltimore and Ferguson protests.
Right. I'm feeling a lot of microaggression from you right now. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I know. We're doing a video on that. Do you realize that not a single person we asked, not one, knew what microaggression was except for gender studies feminists?
I can't wait to see this.
and by the way, and like the one lady, this is totally off camera. My video producer, Jared, is here. This one girl was talking, and she was like, I want to talk about this off camera. I said, okay. She goes, you don't know what it's like to be a woman and experience sexism. And listen, Michelle, I say this as you're a small lady. I mean, you know, you've been around my wife and I. It's the land of giants.
Yeah.
Our wedding was like straight out of a page of Hitler Youth. Every single bridesmaid was 6 foot
that
blonde.
That is going to be, okay, never mind.
That's going to be clipped and taken out of context.
Yeah,
I know.
Yes.
But Lee Dorn was also there, and I turned to him and I said, Lee, he was one of my groomsmen, and I said, Lee, I'm so sorry that you feel so Jewish. I said, I know, this is the whitest wedding. Everyone looks like they're Aryan. And he said, no, I get it. They're all related to your wife. You know, it's Russian, German, like pure. That is my wife's bloodline. So it comes with a look. But, this gender studies feminist said, you know what it's like to be a woman? And I think you would know, Michelle. And she goes, you know, some guy, like I was walking down the street today, just, you know, the stuff they say. And I said, well, like what? Someone complimented me on my smile. I kid you not. I said, well, first off, she was lying because she had a horrendous smile. I'm sorry. It sounds show, but she was not an attractive woman who you would say, hey, beautiful smile. It's more of a snarl. I said, well, great. And she just couldn't believe I said that. Well, you don't know. Do you ever have anyone compliment you on your smile? I said, no, because I've got a snaggle tooth, but I would like to. And we have an entire generation of people who are just offended. And anyways, this doesn't go back to the entrepreneur thing, but I think that still is reflected in this disconnect, even with the entrepreneurial spirit, people who are out there who want to strike it big, yet they vote for people who punish them for that. People who want free speech, who want this form of ideas, yet they're social justice warriors and they don't see it. And that does frustrate me. And I think a big part of that is honestly an absence of the right even reaching out to them.
Well, yeah. I mean, what you were describing with microaggression and these feminists, I mean, I experienced it all at Oberlin, and I always talk about the Oberlinization of America. And I think that kind of ties everything together here, because they're not actually imparting knowledge of history into kids' brains from preschool through college and beyond. And then a lot of these people who, of course, are majoring in gender studies or multiculturalism are the people who are then going back into the elementary school classroom. So what does that bode for innovation? What does that bode for the next generation of makers and builders? Well, it means that these young people are not getting their educations inside the classroom. They're getting them outside the classroom. And the last chapter, I talk about the history of prosthetics in America from the Civil War to the present. And I do have some sense of hope, because I quote these Girl Scouts who made this Lego-powered prosthetic hand for a little girl, a toddler, who had been born with a congenital defect. And somehow these girls, maybe through their Girl Scout troop, I don't know what, but parents or grandparents who still have some sense of appreciation for innovation and intellectual property rights, one of the little girls said, "I'm so glad that we're getting a patent, because it means that we've made it."
Wow.
So yay.
Well,
so
let's
there
put
you go.
Them in
a glimmer
touch.
Of hope.
Let's put them in touch with Caitlyn Jenner, and they can help each other some Lego.
You've been thinking about her, him, way too much.
Yeah, I know. I honestly have. And you know what's funny? There are so many things. That's a topic for another day, and we're actually going to have some people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This doesn't involve my book. And I'm sorry, Michelle, I think I've gotten to maybe – no, I've asked exactly zero questions that were suggested by your publicist talking about the book.
Yahoo!
I know, but I really do think if people haven't read any of your books, this is a great one to start with. Now, where's the best place for people to find you? You're everywhere. Where can people find the Angry Brown Lady most easily?
Well, at Michelle Malkin on Twitter and michellemalkin.com. on the web.
This is true. And do not anger her on Twitter. I've seen what happens. And it's not...
not safe for work, yeah.
No, it is not safe. Well, it's not safe for... I mean, it wouldn't be safe for the Avengers. It's you go nuclear on these people on Twitter. I'd say have your back, but... matter of fact, I need you to have my back more so. But not only that, if you could just swaddle me like a baby through Twitter and carry me, I think that'd be a more... appropriate representation. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. And I know you're not doing the media all the time, but whenever you have anything, please do come back.
I will. Always a pleasure. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much. Louder with Crowder. We will be back with more messages from these self-lubricating pocket catheters. Hey, if you like this, be sure to subscribe by clicking my face here on YouTube, clicking the video next to me, or subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, or louderwithcrowder.com. It's all free. And I'm sure many of you will still find a reason to bitch about it.